Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, Facebook has teamed up with Ray-Ban to create a new line of eyewear called Ray-Ban Stories. We'll talk about that on the show and some other tech issues with our guest, Jesse LeGru, back with us. He's an information security architect at Madison College's Technology Services Group. He works to design, develop, and implement security standards and protocols. So as we visit with him, what questions do you have maybe about smart glasses? Could you ever see yourself using them? Is there a tech item in your life you didn't think you'd ever buy, but now you enjoy using? Maybe you have questions about laptops and getting a new one. We'll take any of your technology-related questions. Love to hear from you. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jesse LeGru, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It's great to be here today.
Facebook has just released a new line of smart glasses. They call them Ray-Ban Stories. Can you explain the concept of smart glasses in general first?
Yeah, and I think one of the first things we had seen quite some time ago was the Google Glasses, which was including something that these glasses do not, which was AR, otherwise known as augmented reality. So you don't just record potentially events around you. You actually interact with it and you might have a screen. In this case, the glasses are really meant to help you kind of, I'd say in some ways, data collect some of the items on your day-to-day life. So, you know, you're in a situation, you want to record video or a photo, and it gives you easy access to do that where it will sync with an application on your phone with Bluetooth through an application called Facebook View, and it will allow you to download, delete, or potentially share that information should you want to on Facebook or other social media channels. So, you know, really the Ray-Ban Stories is really to help you kind of craft a story, just like you might see on Instagram or a variety of other social media platforms, is being able to record those little events and being able to use something with that. And I think a lot of individuals are very used to this with having children, wanting to record those special moments. This gives you that opportunity to record it extremely easily. So it does include microphone, camera, and a speaker. So if you actually are just moving around and actually want to listen to an audiobook, it can help you with that as well. So I think a lot of the interest in the technology is for grabbing those little snippets of your life around you. But you can also use it for some relaxation and enjoying your favorite.
So what do you do with it? You've got the glasses on. I'm looking at Trina LaSusa, our engineer, and if I had those glasses on, I could be recording her smiling but covered face. She's got a face mask on. But what would I have to do? Would I tap the glasses or what do you do?
Yeah, for these glasses in particular, you do need to tap once to take a picture, tap twice to take a video. And, you know, one of the thoughts that come up with any of these kind of technologies is privacy. So how do I know someone's not just walking around recording everything? And there is a little LED on the glasses. So if you are recording, people can see that it's lit. Granted, you probably have to be pretty close to be able to see that LED. But it does give an indicator, hey, by the way, this might be recording some footage. But they make it really easy to be able to do it, pretty much to address those situations that we've all had where, you know, there's something really amazing I want to capture. How do I do it? Oh, I didn't grab my phone in time, so I'm not going to be able to capture that information. So they try to make it really easy by just hit a button, let it do its thing. And from there, then you can go to your phone and do what you need to do.
So do you think they're going to take off this time around? I mean, the early attempts didn't seem to work well in terms of people buying the glasses.
Yeah, I think there are a few different challenges, especially when thinking about Google Glass. Google Glass was maybe in a few different ways ahead of its time. It wasn't just listening to media or being kind of an augment to your day-to-day life, you know, acting as a speaker, acting as a microphone, allowing you to take phone calls. It allowed you to do a whole lot more than that. It's also why they were extremely expensive. And since then, a lot of those pieces have become a little bit more economical, but these glasses don't go all out to try to give you that augmented reality situation. So it's a more simplified approach. And I think there are situations where individuals are going to find this technology appealing. I think individuals that are doing, you know, whether it's a live journal or just want to record their day-to-day lives, are going to kind of want this technology. There are some of these already out there that, you know, aren't from Ray-Ban or Facebook that can allow you to do this, that can allow you to record photos or video. So I think there's a, definitely a specific market for it, and some people are going to be interested. And I think there are some other people where, you know, I don't really take that many photos anyway. It's just not a thing that I really need in my life. If I need to do one, take one photo, I will take my phone out and I will hit the you know, record photo button once and I'll be fine. I think there will be specific people that are interested in it. And it's usually the people who are probably taking a lot of photographs right now. Those are likely individuals that might want this kind of technology, maybe not for the highest resolution photos. But if you're looking for a very good photo and a very easy, accessible way to take it, I think it could be a really good option.
I guess I could see myself out fishing, and I'm muskie fishing, and I get muskie on the line. I might want to tap those glasses twice and get a video of myself reeling the fish in.
Yeah, and that's I think one of those situations too, where, you know, if you had a phone, it's really not easy, especially when you have to deal with the rod and reel of like, well, I can't just drop it and grab my phone. You can tap your glasses, have it recording right away, and you can basically forget about it at that point. You have to know that, well, the recording is going to stop after 30 seconds. So if it is going to be a longer recording, you might have to do it more than one time. But it makes it easily accessible in those moments where otherwise it's really challenging to take out a phone or something else. I think like GoPros, for example, were very popular for that because you could just, you know, put it on a helmet mount or on another kind of mount and simply record all of it and then download that data later. So for individuals just wanting those little captures, I think it's going to work really well. People who are still interested in that really high quality, long recordings of video, you know, GoPros and other kind of mounts are probably going to be popular, but they're also a little bit more expensive. So I think this gives a good option for people who may not want to pay for or even manage having a GoPro with separate applications and, you know, video editing.
Our guest today, Jesse LeGrew, Information Security Architect at Madison College's Technology Services Group. Questions about those Ray-Ban Story glasses or other tech questions? I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Well, I dropped a bundle of money here not too long ago. My daughter, Emily, was off to college. And certainly, I think this time of the year is popular time for buying laptops. Let's talk a little bit about how to make that decision. First, where would you start?
That's a great question. So the first place I normally start, especially when looking at school, you know, get recommendations from the locations you're going to for education. Many times they may have different programs that actually offer equipment, or they'll have recommendations in terms of this is the equipment we would either want or maybe even require you to purchase, because certain applications do have requirements. Maybe they need to work on Mac OS, maybe they need to work on Windows, maybe you need a little bit of both. But usually if you're going to school, that's one of the places I would start, because you would not want to purchase something and then find out later, you know, they had a really great recommendation. I didn't know, and I got something that isn't going to work for that program. So, you know, that's number one, you know, find out what the requirements are for the program that you're looking at. From there, once you know what you're looking at and what your requirements are, then it's usually just trying to find out, you know, what's the bare minimum? What can I, what can I get away with? and how cheap can I purchase it? And usually you can spend a little bit more money to make that device work a little bit better for you. And so it's not just for education, you might need to do it for other personal activities. Most people don't have two or three or four computers. They might have a smartphone and they might have a laptop. Or in some cases, they might just have a smartphone. There are a lot of students that are actually exclusively working off of smartphones for a variety of their, day-to-day educational work. Smartphones do have a lot of capability for that, but it can be a little bit challenging as well. So know your requirements. And if you can, I always try to increase a few other items on your laptop or desktop that you're looking for. You know, RAM or memory is one of the increases I would usually recommend. Get a little bit more if you can. 16 gigabytes is usually pretty good. I think in this case, 8 gigabytes is pretty standard. But it gives you a little bit of room to grow. That's where all of your programs are actually really running from. So the more room you can give your applications to run, the faster they're going to run. They don't have to worry about bumping into each other and not having enough resources. The other common item is hard drive space. That depends. Usually space is relatively inexpensive. Most of the times when we buy systems, they have more storage than we actually need, unless people are storing a lot of other files locally. You may not need it. I think with the advent of streaming services, most of us don't need to store that kind of data anymore. You might be streaming from a video streaming service or an audio streaming service and may not actually need to capture all of that data on your device anymore. So upgrading that may not be as much of a need, but memory is one of those that I always recommend. You know, the more you can have, the better. It will speed up that performance. And if, people are remote, one of the other things that I always recommend is, do you have a camera and do you have a good microphone on your computer, whether it's a laptop or a desktop? So if it's a laptop, does it come built in, or do you purchase one extra if you do have a desktop? And that's going to be really important when you need to communicate with people that are remote, which has happened a whole lot more recently than it has in the past. So, future-proof yourself a little bit. You may not think you need it, but just having it available is really, really important, because when you need it, it's there. So think about those opportunities too. What might I need in the future and how can it work for me? Because I would plan on having a computer for 5 plus or minus years. Some people, get them far more frequently. Some people might wait 10 years. But plan on your future use and just make sure you don't bottleneck yourself too much, because some things you can't upgrade. Once you have purchased something with a certain capability, you may not be able to go beyond there without purchasing a new laptop. So just think about that ahead of time.
Jesse LeGrew, our guest today. You can join in with your questions. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Trina LaSusa and Tyler Dinner, our engineers today. Natalie Guyette, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at technology on the show today, Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jesse LeGrew of Madison College's Technology Services Group. Started out, we talked about those Ray-Ban Story glasses. We've also talked about purchasing a computer. And certainly, if you have a question, maybe you've got a tech question relating to what you've got right now, hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Just another thing or two about the laptops. What's the range and screen size for laptops? I know I've got a couple of laptops that they're not mine. I use for work purposes, either at the radio station or in my other job at in the Department of Life Sciences Communication. And the bigger one I like a lot better than the smaller one, just given my eyesight abilities. But there is some size differences there.
Yeah, and you can actually go really small or really, really big. And so normally you'll see laptop, probably the range is from 11 or 12 inches up to about 17 inches. You can go a little bit higher. I think more commonly you are going to see laptop screen sizes of, 15 inches, 14, 13 inches. I use a laptop that is 15 inch. Tends to be a little bit larger, but I do like the real estate. It also depends on what you're working on. Eyesight is a big thing to consider. But the bigger anything gets, the heavier it gets, and the more challenging that can be to move around. But for me, one thing I like about the larger laptops is generally you're also going to have a larger keyboard, which also means you're going to have a number pad. I actually really like having a number pad. I enter numbers quite a bit. And so having that available is actually really, really nice to have. So that's the thing to think about when you're getting a laptop. If you're going to be an accountant and you get a really small laptop, you're not going to have a keypad. You can always get a separate one, but having it on the laptop might actually be of interest to you. So it's an odd thing to think about when you're purchasing a laptop and the screen size, but the keyboard actually is affected by it. I've actually had a 13-inch MacBook Pro for a while. That I actually really liked the size of it. It was nice to move around. But I actually do personally like the larger screen. Depending on what I'm working with, it's just nice to be able to visually see things. But it can be really nice to have a small device that you can carry around really easily, and it doesn't feel like you're gonna, hurt yourself or somebody else by carrying it around.
Okay, well, let's take some calls. We've got some emails too. John in New Berlin, we'll go to you. John, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I'm actually looking for a specific laptop, and it might not be laptop that the young college students are looking for. I'm looking for laptops that still have DVD players and have a multitude of legacy ports, and I'm having a hard time finding that. Any suggestions?
That's a good question. So on the DVD one, it is very challenging to find laptops with a lot of the older devices. USB, normally a lot of adapters will come for USB. So I think in many cases you'll find some workarounds which could be useful for optical drives, DVD and CD drives. There are a lot of options for external drives. So when you need it, you have it, you can plug it in. It's actually one of those things I have a backpack with tools. One of those things I have in it, outside of maybe external hard drives, is a DVD burner that I can plug into any device via USB and get it up and running. You have options. It may not come built in, but you can actually get a lot of external devices that will plug in and make it available to you, and you can even use when you get another device. So those are some options if you need it. If you are looking for older peripherals, depending on what it is, they simply may not come with them anymore. Definitely old PS2 connectors you might have for a keyboard are not something you're probably going to be finding on a laptop. You likely can still find adapters that will allow you to use it on a new device, but you're not going to be able to see it likely on a newer laptop. So adapters are your friend. And I think there are a variety of laptop adapters for different media you can get out there. But I would actually look to get a device that really works for you. And if you do need a DVD burner or if you do need a different device, look for an external peripheral that you can use to attach to it. In some cases, they actually might work better than the previous ones you've had built into your device. But they don't have to be terribly expensive. So they do work really well. I've actually, most of the laptops I've purchased recently don't have DVD burners anymore. That being said, I haven't used a DVD burner in quite some time anymore. I use a lot of flash drives. I use cloud storage. But if you are doing video conversions between VHS and DVD and digital media, those might be items that you would need. But you can get those externally. So I would look at getting those devices externally, plugging them into your device, and actually potentially in that case, making sure you have a good docking mechanism so you can plug those devices in into that central workstation. The docks can help you quite a bit with making sure you can convert between those different items. You might have different media cards that you can also plug in to make that a little bit easier. So it can be a challenge. In some cases, you may have to throw out those old peripherals, but if you really need them to work, there's usually a way, and you can find them in most cases by doing a little bit of searching online.
There you go, John. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Back to those Ray-Bans for a minute. Sharon from Lac des Flambeaux called. She couldn't stay on the line, but she's wondering how the glasses work for those of us who wear prescription glasses.
That was actually the question I was wondering myself. So I wear glasses. I've stopped wearing contacts for quite some time. I am not going to wear two pairs of glasses just to do this. They do not have prescription glasses yet, but they will. So at some point in the future, they will actually have a prescription option. So you can get prescription lenses in the Ray-Bans and then use all the features. They just currently don't have it today, but that will be something they'll have in the future.
Gordon in Fort Atkinson emailed, he uses the Windows operating system and would like to know which browser is best in terms of confidentiality, preserving your privacy, essentially.
I don't know if I can point to any one particular browser. I think there are a variety of plugins and other items available. I know Brave is a browser that I've heard quite a bit. It's very, very different. Most people have never heard of it, but it offers a lot of other features most people don't want. I usually see people who are more into technology wanting to use something like that. One of the items I'd always take a look at with any browser is some of the plugins that they have available from reputable organizations that actually help to block ads and to block a lot of the other content you might not want. So they can block ads, they can block potentially other malicious content that could be on websites that you're visiting. And you will see those plugins usually for, Firefox, Chrome. You might see them for Edge. But there are a lot of those plugins I would actually take a look at. You can tweak your browsers to make it a little bit easier for yourself to make sure you're not giving up too much information. Another thing I always recommend, even if you have a very good browser with a lot of plugins that help to filter that information so people can't collect your data, when you are visiting a site, you can try to use in-private browsing or a private browsing window whenever you're accessing those sites, just to make sure that there's less of a chance of data being shared between browser tabs, between browsers, or other cookies. There's a variety of dangerous things on the internet. Even if you do the best things, a bad website can do bad things. So I definitely recommend looking at plugins that will protect your privacy, but could also block malicious sites as well. A lot of browsers do that by default. You might actually have it from your internet provider, but I would recommend looking at a variety of privacy add-ins that you can get. That being said, it's always good to be careful. Look for items that have had a large number of reviews and positive reviews. It may require a little bit of research as well, because there are bad extensions out there. Bad people doing bad things that you can download and actually are doing the exact opposite of what you want. So just be very careful about the items that you're looking at. It's why one of the reasons, using Chrome, Firefox, I usually recommend if a lot of people are using it and there's a good community of developers, at least it's being maintained. There may be an issue with that software at some point in the future. There may have been some issue at some point in the past, but you at least know there's a good community trying to take care of it.
Let's take another call. Rhonda in Brookfield will give you a chance. Oh, we lost Rhonda there. So let's go to an email. Listener email, they signed up for McAfee subscriptions 3 or 4 years ago when there was a special pricing with auto-renewing. Initial pricing has since doubled. It allows them to protect up to 10 items. Unfortunately, they aren't very tech-savvy, the emailer, and aren't utilizing the service to its fullest extent and don't really know how to do so. Do you have any recommendations for other online or other carriers that may have a more affordable plan in terms of pricing and maybe simplicity?
Yeah, if you're looking for antivirus or just making sure that something bad doesn't get on your computer, if you are running Mac OS or Windows, I would just make sure you have the most up-to-date operating system that is supported. And both Mac OS and Windows does come with antivirus, anti-malware features built in. So if you're using the most recent version of Windows 10, Windows Defender has come a very long way in the last decade in terms of what it can do, what it can find, and what it blocks. So it's built in. It is free with the operating system. All you need to do is turn it on. So that is free. If you have Windows, if you have Windows 7 or 8, take advantage of an upgrade to 10 if it is available, because it will have those protections built in. A lot of the other features that might come with McAfee or any other third-party service could be services like VPN. It could have options for other antivirus or malware detections. And there are other free applications out there. But if you don't use it, at least don't buy it right away. You can get it later on. They might come bundled with a password manager. There's a lot of other services out there. So if you don't need it today, you can always go with what's built in your computer. And then later, when you know, oh, I need a password manager because I can't remember all these passwords. Well, you might be able to find a product for that. And there's a lot of great options out there. And if you're looking for a VPN, you might find out, oh, it comes with this password management service. So I would just worry about what do you need today? Try to meet those needs. And then if you need those other features, and I would recommend all those other features, but I know why people don't look at them all right away. It's a lot of stuff. Get what you need today. A lot of it's built in with your most recent operating system. When looking at any kind of antivirus malware, not having an up-to-date and patched system or supported system is one of those large risks. So if you don't have an up-to-date version of Windows, get that updated version of Windows. Make sure all your applications are patched. That alone will protect you quite a bit, even if you don't have up-to-date antivirus. I still recommend antivirus. It's built in once again. Just make sure you have that latest version, and it'll save you some money. You don't have to get that subscription, at least, currently.
Rhonda couldn't stay online, but wondering if you have any recommendations for a watch with emergency alert notifications. For example, if you fall and need help.
That is a good question. There are different monitoring smartwatches out there. Some of them are actually built into, some of the Apple smartwatch. You might have them through Samsung. There's a lot of vendors out there, and actually a lot of the vendors that have actually made the alert bracelets also make those kind of devices as well. So you have a lot of options, and they dramatically range in price. So if you're really just looking for that fall detection and the alert response, you might be able to spend significantly less money than getting a smart watch that has the same capability. So yeah, I have no direct experience myself looking at the other end, only on the smartwatches. I would only note that you have a large range of options to choose from. And if you're looking at the less expensive side, you're probably going to want to look at the ones that are specifically suited for that purpose that might just simply have a watch built in, because it's very easy to add that feature. It's also easy to take a smartwatch and add the feature of falling, but you're spending a lot more money at a starting point that you may not need. So I would look at the alert bracelet companies and see what they have capable, but you can actually get some of that information for the variety of smartwatches that are out there. So no particular, I guess, endorsement or idea, but keep your options open. Don't look just at like Apple smartwatches or Samsung smartwatches. Look at the other options that are actually, specifically looking at that medical application of safety.
I have an Apple smartwatch. I love that watch. But I have to tell you, when I'm golfing, occasionally I'll take a swing and the watch will say, Larry, did you fall down? So in other words, it sometimes misreads what I'm doing, and I don't usually fall down when I swing. But I did fall once. I did take a fall once, and the watch was, you know, right there. Would you fall? Are you okay? Kind of thing. So it was handy. I like the smartwatches for all the other things that it does, and keying in with my phone and everything else. It's quite nice. Lois in Chippewa Falls will go to you. Hi, Lois.
Hi there. I have a tablet, a Galaxy 8 Samsung, and I want to connect it to a printer, but I was told I couldn't do that unless I had some other connections for it because I'm just on hotspot. Is that true?
It may be true. Do you recall what kind of printer you have?
Pardon? I'm sorry.
Do you know what kind of printer you have? What model or manufacturer?
I don't have any printer. I'm trying to buy one that I can connect to my tablet.
Okay. What I'd probably look for, so there's a variety of different ways to connect to printers. You can use Bluetooth potentially, or you can use wireless. And if you are using a mobile hotspot at home for internet connectivity, you may also be able to hook your printer up to that same thing. I think it's going to be potentially a little bit more problematic. Bluetooth might be the way I would go. Bluetooth is built into a variety of devices, phones, laptops, hopefully printers as well. And that is completely separate from the normal hotspot wireless that you might use to connect to the internet. So if you don't have a wireless network at home that's dedicated and that's up and running all the time, Bluetooth might be a good way for you to go. You do need to physically be closer to the printer in order to print because there is a distance limitation. Similar to earbuds or other Bluetooth devices, you have to be relatively close in order for it to work. But that could give you a good option to print. But even then, printing from a mobile operating system, I've done it in the past before using an Android and an iPad. I've had kind of mixed results because the software from the manufacturer also has to be pretty good and supported. So if you do get a printer that does have Bluetooth or has connectivity so you can use it with your phone, make sure that your phone also has software from that vendor that actually works really well. The Samsung Galaxy S8 is a little bit older. It's still relatively new. But if you're not able to get the most up-to-date software for that printer, you might have challenges printing on a day-to-day basis. So those are just some things to keep in mind. I think Bluetooth could work. I think wireless could work. I've usually had more of an issue just with that third-party software and having that on my phone or my mobile device to be able to print really well all the time. Laptops and desktops just generally have better software. They make better software for those platforms in order to be able to do it. So those are at least the struggles I've had in the past before. But usually if you're going to a location that sells them, if it does have Bluetooth or other wireless, you have Bluetooth on your device. If they have a test printer that has power, it has Bluetooth, hopefully you can pair it and actually try to print and see how it functions for you and whether the software works. So at least you get some practice with it and to see if it's going to function the way that you want it to.
All right. Thank you, Lois, for calling. Andrew in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a really annoying problem when I'm working in Windows and Microsoft Office Word 2007. And it is, I'm a writer, and I have all kinds of Word documents. And every once in a while, I will open up one of those documents and find that all my formatting has disappeared and defaulted. All my indents, all my boldface, it's all just, and I have a feeling it's some kind of built-in macro or something that I inadvertently hit on the keyboard, and it suddenly removes all this. And it's just really annoying.
Yeah, it would be. What do you think, Jesse?
Well, one thing I'd recommend is They do actually have an option to potentially clear formatting in Word. You also have options just to ignore the formatting completely and just show it as standard plain text. So I would recommend at least going to the formatting option and seeing if it is turned on or off. If you do have a different computer, I would recommend actually opening the file on a different computer just to see if you get a different behavior. It could be Word. It could be the file that you have itself. It's usually going to be one of those two. So I always just recommend trying it with a different program and seeing if it does work. There are also completely free updated versions of open source software that can actually read and compose Word documents. So it could give you a different option to read that information. And it's completely free and it's updated. So OpenOffice and a lot of other options I'd take a look into, because Office 2007 is going to be challenging to keep up to date. And so you might run into other issues there. But at least it'll give you something to test your document to see if it's the document or it's Word. You might just need to see if there's a Word button to not clear all the formatting.
There you go, Andrew. Thank you so much. Roland wondered if there's malware available for iPhones.
Yes. So there's malware available for everything. And actually, I think one of the most frequent, it was just recently talked about, I'm trying to think of the name of it. It begins with, but it's basically spyware that you can have installed in your iPhone or other device that will leak that information. Primarily, it was seen in nation state actors or reporters, where they actually did find remnants of this spyware on their devices. It's a very extreme example, but they were able to basically collect everything off of the iPhone. There is viruses for everything, depending on what you're looking at. And some of it is actually just widely sold. Some of it might be spyware that people like to install on other people's devices because they want to collect information about a spouse, a coworker, or something like that. So that's also one of those recommendations. Keep your phone close to you. Make sure you have a screen lock and that no one else can get into it, because there's a variety of ways to get bad things on devices. And even in this case, really all it took was receiving a text message from somebody in order to get infected. It did not require you to open the text message itself. So there are ways to initiate this that make it really, really scary and really troubling. In this case, rebooting the actual phone itself cleared the memory so you could be, relatively clean again. But if you received another message or another phone call, you might be back in that same state. So short answer is yes. There's dangerous stuff out there all the time. So, do what you can to just be aware.
Jesse, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it. We'll look forward to your next visit in a month or two. Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you.
Jesse LeGrew, Information Security Architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. He'll be back. We'll talk with him again in probably a couple months. Next up, we have another edition of Mondays with Mike. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.